Hello, Relay friends. We are back. It is March 4th. I am here with Chicken Lady, Lindsay Hine, Chicken Leg, Chittum, and Peter, Mr. Scarf, Bromka. Look at that scarf. It's so it's just elegant.
I got two
scarves. So long. Oh, it's almost two. Oh, no wonder.
Why are you Chicken Leg? Why are you Chicken Leg Chittum? I thought you were Chinless Chittum.
I was Chinless Chittum. Oh. I was also Chicken Leg Chittum. I had a lot of nicknames, evidently.
Listen, I forget the name of the person, but someone like had Instagrammed about the Chinless Chittum talk. And I was like, should we just like never talk about it again? My feelings are still hurt for you. I'm still upset.
I know.
I'm still mad about this. I'm mad about these kids that called you that.
Well, they were my friends. And they weren't like fake friends. They weren't like, well, I guess these are my friends because these are the people who were least mean to me. They were actually friends of mine.
That's a little bit better.
It was all in jest.
I think that's a little bit better.
The orthodontist who was trying to push chin implants on me was
friend. That guy.
He was
that
100% guy. Not.
That's the real
child
problem.
Abuse. We want to find that guy. We're going to chase him down.
Like I've said many times to you, Peter, he's dead. There's no chasing him down.
Oh, like we're going to crush him or like he's deceased?
He is deceased. He was like 78 years old at the time.
Anyway, we're moving on.
The chins and the chickens can wait to the end of the podcast. I think we should probably start with more running and do like maybe that stuff at the end.
Did anyone else see the title for last week's episode? Said a wide ranging conversation, which is just like the biggest euphemism for like this is all over the map. I'm just curious if anyone's listening. Please let us know if you're just like nope, or if you're like yeah, I'm in. Like
if you want to know like how wide ranging that conversation was. That was Riverside FM. That's the recording platform we use for this. They have an AI plugin that will do show notes for you. They're not great, but it's a nice first draft.
Oh.
AI decided that this was a wide-ranging conversation. This wasn't even a Matt Chittum description.
Wow. Statistically, this makes no sense.
Right. So AI computed that based upon all the other Riverside FM podcasts, this was extremely wide-ranging and should be put into the description.
AI is like, they don't know what they're talking about, actually. That's what's happening here.
These people, if you want to listen to this podcast, best of luck. because it is a weekend. It's a Monday. We had the World Indoor Championships. We had the Tokyo Marathon. We also had the Woodside Marathon on Saturday. Curious if you guys knew anyone who went there.
Where's that? Knew a few.
It's in Texas.
That was Woodland. That was a Woodland Marathon or
Woodland,
is it Woodside?
Sorry, Woodside Woodland. Is a different area. Woodland.
Napa Valley Marathon?
Napa Valley, which people ran fast despite like wind and hail.
Gate River Run?
Gate River Run, which I never understand. I'm always like, cool. Well, tell me, maybe you guys know I think it's just money on that makes Gate River Run a thing.
Wasn't it the 15K championships every year?
Yes, the USATF 15K championships, yeah.
Sorry, you use a bunch of words that don't. I'm looking for actual root cause. Like,
I think the race is really cool. I think the race is really well done. I think Jacksonville does a really good job. So I think that that's part of it. I'm sure money's part of it, but just the fact that it's like, oh, let me go win a U.S. title.
Tradition, kind of legacy. Yeah. Also, it's a great tune up for Boston. I think that's the other thing. So if you're running Boston, it's a really good race to have on the calendar.
It's like the right timing, and then it's a good gut check, and then it's like you keep okay. Like to me,
you also got good weather. You're guaranteed to have good weather down there.
Is it good weather? Or is it like too hot? I don't know. Certainly races like this, I like.
Well, it's not going to be like it's not like hey, it might snow.
That's true. No, exactly. Yeah, that's fair.
I mean, it's probably going to be a little hot, maybe a little humid, but it's also like not that far.
Yeah.
Compared to what a lot of these women just ran the marathon trials, so. That was so cool to see Rachel Snyder win that. And it sounds like per Fast Women that her and Kira were really like duking it out towards the end, which was probably really fun to watch.
Yeah. Rachel Smith now she is.
Oh yeah. Rachel Smith.
It's a personal goal of mine to keep track of married names because I'm like losing people out here in the races now. I'm like, okay, let's Smith. That's like a witness protection program name. So we got to label her with it. She's so fast. I was actually realizing, I mean, Lindsay, you'd be maybe an expert on this. Like the postpartum journey is just like so fragmented. You're left being like, you could totally reasonably be on like a long trajectory. Cause I found myself being like, where's Molly Huddle? Like Molly Huddle needs to come back and crush, like she crushes. But my sense is she's on some like mortal path. And then there's also like superhero path, which is Ellie St. Pierre wins a world title a year with a 1 year old. And you're just like, what is going on?
With that, with Ellie, it's like she's racing a 1500. You know what I mean? Like the volume that you have to get in miles wise is probably a lot less than the volume of a marathoner, right?
But what about the explosive, about the like the explosive movements necessary to like do well in the 1500? Like I can imagine that also being, I don't know, as someone who has given birth, let me please explain this to you.
Well, I just think to me, I'm like the wear
Lindsay,
and tear.
We need to. No, I'm just joking. I'm totally joking. This is.
I like the amount of distance you have to run to get back in shape for a marathon. I'm sure Ellie is doing like lots of miles, but like probably a lot less than Molly Huddle would need to do to compete on the Olympic trial stage. So, yeah, I don't know. I think it's interesting. I was just talking to Rachel Drake, by the way, had that interview.
Oh, nice.
Nice.
And we were talking about this postpartum thing.
For those of you listening,
and,
that was the interview she booked during one of these calls, just to reiterate. She came back mid-call with eyes, like, sparkling, like, hey, Lindsay's back. What happened? And it was because she had secured a great interview she was looking forward to during this call. Okay, keep going.
Yeah. And we were just talking about how like there's just so many nuances to it, because we were talking about McKenna Myler and like it seems like she got to the starting line and the finish line very healthy, still breastfeeding, 10 months postpartum, you know, and it's just like such a case by case situation. But even when you think you feel really good and even when you think you're doing it all right, there's just still like your elasticity, like all the things like might not work into your favor. Even if you think you're being conservative with it, which is what happened to Rachel. She got a sacral stress fracture and she felt like she was being conservative. And then you think you're being conservative and you feel good. You don't feel like you're pushing it too hard. And then it still can happen. So, yeah, it's tough.
And then what about Kellen Taylor? Right, you talked to Kellen before the Olympic trials. It comes out that the second trials in a row, she's running, you know, with a broken leg, essentially. And, you know, she's talking about how, like, this can be attributed to her, you know, breastfeeding while training and, you know, that what that does to your bone density and things like that. And yeah, it's such a, man, I don't envy these people who seem like that. It's like, it's so hard to make these choices because you see some of your competitors doing it at a certain time frame. Even if you're conservative, things can pop up that you don't even know is going to happen, right? Like decisions you make now, there is no short-term effect. It's going to be a long-term effect. So how do you base your decisions on that? And then like even the best practices are so wide-ranging. It's just so tricky. I can't imagine going through it.
I'm just thinking like as a non-professional runner, having babies at like the peak ages of like my 30s, like the ages where you typically might see someone peak, I would think about that. I would be like, oh, I want to squeeze this marathon in before I get pregnant again. And it's like, I can't imagine managing that as my actual professional career. Like, say you are someone that wants like 4 freaking kids, right? Like, or even 3 kids, whatever. And you're trying to manage like, okay, I want to be able to run in this championship, do this, this, this before I get pregnant and take another like really essentially 2 full years off racing hard. Because you have your entire year, your pregnancy, and then you're at least 6 months of postpartum or whatever. So, yeah, I mean, just like planning babies and running professionally is challenging. So freaking hats off to all the moms out there doing it. And I do sometimes feel like, is it annoying to runners who aren't moms? Because we're always like, oh, look how badass that mom is. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, is that kind of like.
That's a good question.
Is that frustrating? I
can't imagine it being that frustrating because it's not like you're tearing someone down when you're doing that. No one's been like, all right, you're good, but you've never given birth. Like I've never heard anyone like say that, like do like the contrary point. I think it's just more like, you know, it's all positives. Like this person's great. And look what else they've done or they've overcome or another part is factored into their lives. You know, Lindsay, you and I had a conversation about this that was like, much more on the other end of the spectrum. But like, I always wonder, like, on the guy's side of like, you know, you always wonder, like, is that dude actually parenting?
Oh, right.
Or is that dude just like, does he just happen to live at the same address as his kids?
Does he know the names of his kids?
Right. They just happen to live at the same address. There's not actually parenting going on. Yeah. We weren't talking about professional roles. We were talking about a different class of individuals. But I don't think it's a teardown. Unless someone like phrases it that way. Someone's like, you adopted kids. It doesn't count or something like that. And I've never heard anyone say that. And, you know, thank God for that.
I think there's these spectrums. Like, I get really annoyed when, like, there's a lot of behaviors from the past that are not the best. You know, be like, look at her, that bigger runner really making her way down the road. And you're like, all right, that was like, none of those comments were helpful. And yet I think there is a pendulum. There are people who think, like, we are a professional sport that is human bodies flying through motion, down the road, kicking and passing each other. I mean, Kara, bless Kara's heart, she's able to walk a very fine line. She has one of the best vocabularies in the sport about how to comment on people's movement without their body. There are definitely voices in our sport who think if you comment about someone's body, like, you should be canceled. And I think those people should be blown out of the water, because I think it's egregious that, like, they'll be like, why are you commenting that this woman gave birth 6 months ago? And I'm like, because she's running like 31 minute pace for the 10K and it's incredible. And if you can't appreciate, it's a really big deal. And if you're like so obtuse that you think we can't comment on people's bodies in motion, like, and that, I think those are the people who are so geeked out, like so down the rabbit hole of the sport, they think like times should speak for themselves, which is totally absurd. Like, times are all contextual and don't make any sense on their own.
And no sport is like that. No sport has metrics that are completely devoid of context.
And people like,
it's interesting that you say that too, Peter, though, because there is this like body sensitivity, positivity, you know, road we've led down. And I've thought about that, like, in my weightlifting, because I'm like, I have really long legs. So I'm like, these moves are harder for me because my legs are longer. Do you know what I mean?
The weight differently.
I feel like I have further to go than some people. And so with running, things might be more challenging for different ways that we are just like naturally built. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think it must be hard to be a woman in so many ways, let alone coming back from pregnancy and being like, can I compare myself to myself and not to just Ellie St. Pierre? Like, sorry, we're like totally burying the lead. Like, she won a world championship. She kicked home in like just an incredible kick that you're like, I guess if you watched, we watched her race the last few weeks, like at Millrose, you're like, wow. I mean, it's just hard to fathom. I don't know if it's, what was it? McKenna Myler had a great post. She's like, she caught herself realizing that, she wasn't sure like what women are capable of. Like, she was like, should I be that surprised? Or I don't even really know. Like, I'm very pleased with how my postpartum body is behaving. But like, are we underselling what women are capable of? And at the same time, you're like, Ellie St. Pierre is faster than she was last year. Like, that's like, that still feels crazy. And so I'm sure we should bring on someone who has more of a scientific background to better help us better understand the context of like maybe what's going on. I mean, I had a friend who, when she gave birth, felt like the extra blood volume, like she had a lot of oxygen and was like doing amazing things. She's like, I'm in that post baby like performance enhancing phase. And I'm like, okay, tell me all about it. I don't know.
I also think there's like just a really strong mental shift after you've had babies. I mean, for me personally, at least, like, after going through the birthing process, there's a mental stamina you did not realize that you had, in my experience. And so I think there's something to that as well.
Have I already told that story of like, I was running marathons and then my son was born, and witnessing my wife give birth, I was like so dumbfounded. And then I was telling someone about it, and like, you know, game of telephone, it gets back like, yeah, Peter was comparing giving birth to marathoning. And I was like, that's not what I said. My point was, I think my point at the time was like, it would be like if you arrived in Boston from Hopkinton, they were like, cool, cool. We're just going to need to have you head back out to Hopkinton. And you're like, no, I'm done. And they're like, I'm sorry, that's not an option. please head back out.
You're going to have to stay up every night. You're going to have to be awake every night for the next 3 months.
See, I had heard it through the game cell phone that you had gained mom strength because you witnessed your wife's birth. That's how it came to me.
Okay, good.
But I will say I'm a woman who had epidurals. I had one C-section and then three epidurals. Like they're called VBACs when you have birth after C-section vaginally. Anyway, and I chose to get that epidural the second it got like too hard to handle. So I cannot imagine doing the whole dang thing. Like Lauren Flores, one of my friends who was the host of the Up and Running podcast back in the day. She's now the head coach at Pepperdine. She has a home birth, totally unmedicated, and just, I'm like, that to me, you are a god. I do not know how you do that. But I will say, when I was in labor and going through that process, I was thinking, actually, running marathons has made this so much easier for me because I had so much endurance. Like, it takes so much endurance. When you put, I had to push for 3 hours on one of my kids, and it's like, I needed that. I needed the physical endurance that running had given me over the years. Like, I was like, I don't know how I would be doing this right now if I wasn't physically fit, is what I'm saying.
Marcus, we're talking about this because American mom Ellie St. Pierre is world champion. So we will be talking about America the Great for the remainder of the hour.
First Lindsay, of all, Peter, you're talking about, like, obviously this is a great subject, but you've got a scarf on. Trying to say that you're now all things to all women. I mean, what the hell has happened? Like,
it's a women's scarf, Marcus. It's a women's scarf.
Scarves are unisex. There is no women's scarf, men's scarf.
Everything is
that's
unisex.
That's kind of female, that scarf you're rocking, Peter. I'm sorry.
No, Peter, this is straight out of The Office. Like, so it's unisex. Like, yes, and it fits your hips very well.
Yeah, here we go. Wait, Lindsay, I wanted to one more wrinkle off.
Marcus, let me ask you a question.
Okay.
So, World Championships, Josh Kerr takes it home, runs incredibly well. He is just having one heck of a year, that guy. Did it without a blindfold, the whole kit and caboodle. He wins World Championships. How does the World Championships work? I know how it works, but I'm just asking for, like, the sake of our listening audience. Okay, he's from the UK, but obviously the UK itself isn't a country in this at the World Championship. So, like, when he wins, who is he representing, and how does the UK as a whole embrace him?
I think he's Scottish, isn't he? So, yeah, I think it depends on, like, what you ask him on a day, and sometimes it might be Scottish, sometimes it might be Great Britain. So it really depends. But yeah, for Olympics and the World Champs, it is Great Britain. So yeah, fair play to him. And I've got to say this, Matt, when I listened to back on the podcast about Ingebrigtsen being a tattooed toddler, I literally laughed out loud during my run. So I'm glad it was an easy run, to be honest. Yeah.
We had quite a few comments on Instagram liking that one. Thankfully, Jakob Ingebrigtsen was made aware. Josh Kerr did watch the Instagram reel. I will say that, because you can see who viewed the Instagram reel. Josh Kerr did watch it, did not comment on it. So
no.
I'm just going to assume that he liked it.
Wise. Yeah. Look, my friends say, look, don't like, you know, you don't have to interact with everything. do you ever see that? I'll just drop this in here. There's, like, Instagram, you know, hits us with all sorts of, like, you might be interested in this. And if you have, this is a whole other topic, but if you follow enough, like, female runners, it's also like, do you want to see all these bikini models? And you're like, no, that's, like, a very different thing. But when my friends and I get together, we always laugh about the guys who, like, their names always pop up, like, this guy liked this photo, and you're like, dude, just like see those photos. You don't have to, like, double tap that photo and let because the Instagram's gonna let all your buddies know that you were like, yeah, just giving it a thumbs up, here you go, buddy.
They're just trying to curate their feed in a certain kind of way, I guess.
Let the algorithm know, like, keep more of this coming my way.
Pete, you know, I can't take you fully seriously with that get-up, really. You've got that cardigan, like, get-up with a light grey T-shirt and the scarf at, like, a jaunty angle on your shoulder, showing two sides.
The British man is slicing and dicing,
like,
me.
I'm just like, what? What is this happening? Like, I can't take this combination seriously.
This apparently my podcast host,
you've got all European of me to this. Like, yeah, after exactly. giving me all this stuff about American stuff, you've got all European of me. And now look at me wearing a hoodie.
In a hoodie and a beanie, which is my typical get up in the morning.
This is not the first time Peter's worn a scarf.
Okay.
Yeah, come on.
This is
he's definitely the person who has the most versatility with clothes on the podcast. Everyone else seems to wear the same thing all the time. Yeah. Peter has worn tie-dyed sweatshirts. He has worn a suit to a draft. He has worn the scarf multiple times.
This is the most underdressed I've seen Marcus. Like, I don't think I've ever seen Marcus in a hooded sweatshirt.
Me and Peter have obviously swapped roles. Yeah, so I'm not quite sure what's happened.
We flip-flop. This is how we do this.
Marcus, what was your biggest takeaway from the weekend? Because we started the podcast before you hopped on. There's a million races, both domestically for us and internationally as well. And I'm sure we didn't even touch on all of them. There was a lot to witness over the weekend. What was the, is there a specific event at a race or a race itself that really captured your attention or a result for that matter?
So much. I mean, obviously you've got the world champs that we spoke about, Josh Kerr. What an amazing run. Incredible to see that. Then obviously you've got, you know, Tokyo. Obviously, shout out to, is it Betsy? I think top American. She did a great.
Yep. And third fastest U.S. marathon of all time.
Yeah.
What did she run? What was her time?
2:19.
Nice.
So, yeah. And obviously, 76-star finishers. Obviously, Tommy getting his second marathon done as well. Got so many friends out there running. And it's going to sound really bad, but I was thinking of this today. So, the Tokyo Marathon, I ran it back in 2017. And I, no word of a lie, I feel like I was the only black person there. And then I saw, like, on the Instagram post, like, Black and Major, Midstrike magazine, all out there representing. And it's amazing to see. So fair play to, like, seeing more diversity out there. I almost had a little bit of it. So, like, pre-race. Okay, this might get me cancelled, but I'm going to say it anyways. Do you remember, like, Michael Jackson, right? Before... In his white phase, basically. When I was approaching the marathon start, I had someone like dressed up as like Michael Jackson and like kind of the Moonraker outfit with a glove and the hat and all that kind of stuff. Possibly light skin, possibly Asian. I didn't inquire, but who knows? And that's as far as I got to like a black person in Tokyo by me. So
Michael Jordan, Michael Jackson impersonator was this.
Running the marathon. I was like, yeah, that was it.
You're like, we'll take what we can get here. All right.
Exactly.
So and how many years ago was that, though?
2017.
Oh, that's okay. So
not long.
Six, seven. I mean, 8 years.
Yeah.
Can I not do math?
There you go. How would our... I know we'll have Tommy on later this week to talk about his race. That dude, two marathons in 2 weeks, and he finishes it with his three fastest miles for the three last miles of his second marathon. Oh, dropping man. The hammer.
Ouch.
My goodness. Painful.
Yeah, we'll see. Well, I'm doubtful that his legs are still attached, but we will see.
Did you see he posted on Instagram, like he was doing all the question boxes and someone said, have you ever broke 3 hours in the marathon? And his mom's in the back are going, yep, several times.
Thanks, Mom.
And I was like, I love it. Mom knows. I'm here for the mom content with this situation with Tommy.
Have you listened to the episode with his mom, the one on his podcast?
No.
I haven't.
It's really good.
I have.
You really, there's a million podcasts to listen to. I didn't ask that to shame anybody. Yeah, there's a million episodes on all these podcasts, especially our own. I mean, shoot, Lindsay, you've earned your Tommy Bonafides at this point. You guys had a 2-hour and 15-minute podcast together like 2 weeks ago. But the episode with both of them, I think it was episode 100 of the Running Sleep Show. It was excellent. Oh, nice. It was really good.
We'll check it out. Yeah,
I wanted to listen to that prior to interviewing him, but I just kind of ran out of time in my life.
Yeah, for sure. So, Marcus, I know, like, obviously you're Great Britain ride or die at this point, but who did you root for harder this weekend? Was it Josh Kerr in the 3000 or Christian Coleman in the 60-meter dash?
I mean, I wouldn't go like that hard. Like, I'm a ride or die to, like, Great Britain. I mean, you don't see me like waving my flag.
No, are you rooting for a different country over Great Britain?
No, I'm just saying that, like, the patriotism isn't as deep. You know, there's no Pledge of Allegiance There's no like flag on my lawn. There's nothing like that. So, yeah, I'm sorry for my sob story, guys. But yeah, Josh Kerr for me.
But Noah Lyles can run a 400. He's so versatile.
That's what we're
trying
to
get at. The fact that Noah Lyles can touch on so many distances. Yes, Lindsay?
Yes, Lindsay. Okay. Interesting you brought that up because I just was looking at Dawn Harper Nelson's Instagram stories.
Mm.
And she was saying, in her opinion, they should have let one of the other people run it. And that they let him he ran it to like see how versatile he could be or whatever. But it seemed like she was saying, like, you're taking this leg away from someone else who could have run it.
Fred Curley.
Fred Curley wasn't there. Fred Curley wasn't in the continent.
No, where was. He was on Twitter making a ruckus.
Okay, because I don't want to put words in Dawn's mouth, so like go watch her story because I did not say that verbatim how she said it, but that to me that's what, and she was like, he did a really good job. He ran really well, good job. And it sounded like she was in support of the other person being able to run the leg. I'm curious. I don't know enough about track and field to have an opinion. What do you guys think?
Well, Peter knows better than me. I will say this. Fred Curley made his stance clear that he wished he was there and feels like he is purposely being shut out of being there. I don't know any of the logistics to get into that, but
this is
that
the problem.
He seems very strongly, I want to be there and I'm not allowed.
Okay.
Oh man, this is why I like track and field is no fun, because it's two things are true simultaneously. One is that I'm sure there's a super complicated Byzantine process for like where you'd need to be when to like have the utmost clarity on like who deserves it the most, which child in third grade has the most gold stars on their piece of paper. And at the same time, when you have Noah freaking Lyles, who is the fastest man in the world, you go, hey, bud, want to catch a pass? Like, let's ball out. Let's go. And you're just like, yes, we get to do that. It's a sport and it's a team and it's a relay and let's have some fun, because there's no end to the number of people who want to be like, this means this slight here, and they're pushing this narrative. And you're like, sorry, I'm like, team sports give us at least some clarity on like, there are times when you just make calls because this is what we, and if it's allowable, it's allowable. But like, Fred Curley wasn't even in the continent. And so I love Fred beyond belief, but I was a little sad to see that he's.
When you say he wasn't on the continent, are you somehow like saying that he should have just flown over there just to like log into his Twitter account from Hogwarts?
No, I'm saying
that would validate his opinion.
What are you talking about? No, I'm saying like he doesn't get to be considered if you're not even like in the same time zone.
But wasn't like, it was chosen before, so he didn't get to go because he wasn't chosen. Is that not the case?
Yeah.
That's why he wasn't there, because he wasn't chosen, right? So of course he wasn't in the time zone. What are you confused about, Peter? I feel like I'm reading this right. Mansplain me some more.
Okay, I'm gonna fully admit here, I don't know every single detail of how this team was selected down to like the beginning. But I know he didn't qualify in the 60. He wasn't on the team as an individual participant.
So maybe were they like, let's save some money. Noah's already gonna be here. Just put him on the team. Is that what doing?
The fastest man in the world, you put him on the team to run two laps like indoors. This is not like, can the guy, you know, do punt returns? He's a kicker. Like this is like, he's a fast runner and we would like him to run fast with a baton. Like, as someone who did high school track, you're like, yeah, it's believable. Let's go. I have no idea what Fred has been up to. This is where we ventured dangerously close to like the Sidious Mag podcast. And I want to be like, hey, Kyle, explain to me what you think would have.
It seems like Fred Curley's beef was that he has wanted to go for a long time and continuously gets passed over. So that was his thing. It was not like, hey, Noah Lyles, I can beat him with the blindfold on.
No,
it was just like, hey, because someone asked him, like, hey, you know, where's Fred Curley at? And he's like, I want to be there, man.
What do you mean, want to be there? Why don't you like go and run the open 400? In U.S. indoors.
Fred Curley has 1.3 million Instagram followers.
Fred Curley's the man.
I did not know that.
He's the man.
He known for? Like, what's his? Because I mean, no. To put it in perspective, Noah Lyles has 560,000 560,000. So it's like,
this factor into the USATF rankings?
Listen, I'm just saying, I feel like Noah Lyles is more famous. And now I'm like, what's going on with Fred Curley? Like, what's he most known for?
Yeah. Peter, how does Fred Curley rank in your people that Taylor Swift should date in track and field rankings? You know, you gave us the rankings before. You went with Ry Benjamin. Ry Benjamin was your first choice. Where was Fred Curley in the top 5?
Very high. I mean, in terms of like swagger, seeming kindness. I think he's like he likes to talk some trash on Twitter, which I appreciate, but also like he seems like a very good guy. Like, I think he would be if a friend wanted to date him. I have no idea if Fred's romantic. like, he could have a family of 5. I don't think he does.
He's only 28, so.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's moved around from a couple of events. I mean, Lindsay, let's just say, as people who spend too much time on Instagram, we could go deep for the next 20 minutes on. I often send you people and go like, why does this person have such a fault? Like, what are they known for? Like, what in the world? You know, and it's also like years flow by. It's like maybe 5 years ago, they were on some return from cancer journey and like were internationally known. But like, there's oftentimes I'm like, I have no idea why this person has 80,000 followers. And then there's the whole like subcontext of like, pretty sure this person bought followers on online.
Oh, 80,000 followers and 5 likes per post.
I think Fred Curley is just the man, but I don't know, to your point, if he got pulled into certain narratives of the sport over the years. I mean, he's the main. You know, look at that guy.
Look at those back muscles.
I mean, he's the kind of guy like he. Now I'm an idiot. I can't recall his total trajectory of events, but he's like, there's been a lot of men moving to the 100 because there's just such attention and notoriety around the 100. Uh-huh. And when he's like, I'm gonna run the 100, I think I was like, yeah, but you're so big. Like, it's just so much. Talk about, we're allowed to talk about male.
Don't talk
bodies.
About bodies.
Don't talk about bodies. Don't talk about like a gargantuan block of muscle moving at the fastest rate of speed in front of you. That would be gauche of you, Peter. Like, how inappropriate to comment on it. But I was like, I don't think he can run that fast. And then he won.
He did.
And you're like, damn. Okay. I take it back. Or I didn't even take it back. He proved me wrong. He's so fast. I would have not been surprised if like a body of mass that
this is
size
the classic took... Peter Promka argument. You started on one spot and then for somehow after 10,000 words, you have now positioned yourself on the other side of the argument.
You know why? Because I'm not Stephen A. Smith and I see complexity in the world.
But speaking
get Marcus in here.
All right, no, because Peter's got the scarf of shade, basically, which is giving him that superpower of just like delivering this random argument, which we don't know where it's going. But there's some shade in there somewhere.
I love it.
Speaking of selecting people for teams, Kenya's going to have quite a choice here coming up again for an Olympic marathon selection because our favorite marathoner over the last 20 years. Mr. Kipchoge, who again is still extraordinarily fast and who ran incredibly well at Tokyo, 206. My goodness, that's great. However,
oh my God, that was the most brutal takedown I've ever heard in the world. Like Matt Chittum just said to Kipchoge, that was great.
However,
I'm so insincere.
He's not going to be one of the top 3 Kenyan choices for the Olympics. And it's so crazy because we've all been thinking about like, hey, it's going to be so great to see him run in Paris. We've all been thinking about this for years. And again, now it's happening again. Was it Jeffrey Mutai? Was it 8 years ago or 12 years ago where he like he threw out like an unbelievable performance? Like, you know, and just, what was it? What was it? 6 months before the Olympics and then didn't get chosen. I was like, oh my God, what the heck? But like, there's so many people that are in that same class, that same tier, that you're going to leave somebody out. There's no way that you can't leave somebody who is very deserving out of it. And after the last 2 performances, I think the last 2, right? It's going to be hard unless you just go completely on legacy and just say, hey, we know he's not one of the top 3. But we're voting on career here. We can't leave him out. Kind of like often you see at like an all-star game, right? Like, all right, this person's voted the all-star game starter, not because he's one of the top 5 players, but because this is about entertainment and he's a legend or she's a legend. But the Olympics aren't really like that. And I think that we are now on the cusp of saying if he gets chosen for Paris, it won't be primarily because of the results. which is something I can't believe that I'm saying. And I guess I'm just sitting on an island by myself, an audio island.
I was going to say you're going to just have to edit out that pause. I didn't want to talk just to talk.
I mean, I have a lot of thoughts. I think you absolutely have to put him on the team. He's the two-time Olympic defending champion, and you don't know that he's not in the top three. I need to get into the more of the – this is like a reoccurring theme here. I need to get more into the details of the numbers. But I'm like, I think Benson Caputo is absolutely on the team. I mean, he's just too good and he's too consistent not to be. I think when you're Eliud Kipchoge, I guess you're no longer the world record holder. You're just the two-time Olympic defending champion. I would put him on the team. I also think it gets into like this whole thing of it's not as though the perfect top three is life and death. You know, it's sort of like why people get so worked up into a lather about the U.S. Olympic marathon trials. And then I'm like, guys, it's just one event at the Olympics where it's a sport. We're having some fun. We're just going to be, you know, Ambie Burfoot got all
easy for you
arm.
To say as a person who's not on like the short list of being chosen. I think for but these like, people, it feels that way.
Sure, sure. But like, it's like literally it's an entertainment vehicle for humanity. So like, it's fun. Like Ambie Burfoot was lathering about, why do we have the trials? We should just pick the top three athletes. And you're like, cause it's entertainment, man. Like we're having fun here. Like chill out. Ambie's, he's a great guy. He's fun. He's a champion. So I don't think you leave Eliud Kipchoge. Like if you disappoint the third place, the third best Kenyan marathoner, and you assume Eliud's like fourth or further down, then so be it. You just say like, yeah, we're putting this guy on the team because that's the most exciting. Unless you honestly think you have a shot at like the full podium sweep for the marathon, and it just doesn't matter that much. You can't like leave him off and be like, yeah, we just decided. But it was a tough showing. I mean, if anything, like it drove home how good he's been for so many years and how like a marathoner finishing 10th place and being unable to stay with the front pack and not being able to reattach to the second pack as it comes by and then fading to third place like is common, but it's not common in Kipchoge world.
Peter, that take was dangerously close to Rob Manfred, the MLB commissioner, saying, why does everyone care so much about getting this medal trophy when talking about the Major League Baseball championship? This was like, who cares? It's just the final selection on the Olympic team. Was like really close to that argument.
I'm saying I'm saying it's not life or death. It's like you let the guy on who's still racing, who's won the last two.
But couldn't you literally use the same argument for him not being on it?
Sure. I mean, there's plenty of arguments for him not being on it, but like we're looking for the best, storylines and the best competition and the thing that everyone wants to see. So,
but I think though, when you look at what he's done, like we hold him to such a high standard. Obviously didn't win Tokyo, but you know, he won Berlin before, then Boston didn't go the way he wanted. And it's like, we're judging him in quite like a high standard. So to not take him would be almost criminal, really. But I do want to shout out Charlotte Perdue though, selected for the Olympics, which was on the podcast as well. So amazing to see her get that chance, obviously from the disappointment from the previous Olympics. So yeah, amazing to see her come back and get that place.
I was going to say that, and I was like, I wonder if Marcus is going to bring it up, though, because it's like, that's his home turf. But that's how I was going to transition the conversation from Kenya. What about the other...
Kipchoge was the fifth best Kenyan runner in Tokyo. We'll just say it.
Doesn't
he was
matter.
The fifth best.
Doesn't matter. Ooh, doesn't matter.
Wow.
Well, it's not a take. That's a fact.
Wow. That is a factor.
You can't race to... Oh, man. I mean, yeah, like it depends on the selection process. So we'll see. I won't be surprised either way. But like, I just think I was thinking about this in terms of what's, you know, head-to-head matchup matters, but you can't. It's like when someone has a slightly worse than perfect day, you can't, like, it's going to happen in the marathon. Oh, except for him, for Eliud, it didn't for, you know, like 8 years. And so you often look at someone's performance and you go, okay, like they were about here and then they fell off to about this zone. You can't like beat them up for like, you're like, once you're falling off, you're like falling off anyways.
Back to Charlotte.
All right.
She was pretty much like snubbed for not make the Olympic team like two cycles in a row now. So like, this is a really big deal for her. And am I saying that right? Would you agree with that, Marcus?
Yeah.
Is snubbed the right word?
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is a huge deal, because I remember when I interviewed her before the last Olympic cycle, and she was like, you know, trying to make the 2020 team, 2021, I guess it, yeah, 2021. And she was still kind of like figuring out how she felt about not making the 2016 team. So this is such a big deal. The other British woman, though, that made the team, isn't she the woman who won the McCurdy Micro Marathon?
Yeah.
Yeah. What's her name again?
Callie.
Yeah, Thackeray. Callie Thackeray.
That's it.
And she looked good during that race. She was so good.
Flying.
I still just like can't wrap my head around going to the McCurdy Micro Marathon and running that fast. And you, that marathon is the marathon that she used to like be selected for the team.
And kudos to the way they set it up, because she was not just out there in like no man's land or no women's land of like, you know, all right, you're not really with the men who are trying to get sub 218 and the women who are trying to get sub 237. Like, she had three people with her the whole time.
But it was a time trial.
Yeah, they set it up like, all right, we know what you're trying to do here. And they, they went out with a plan. So it was, you know, it was kudos to them. It was like they had these little packs throughout the race, where like these people were together, and that was the plan the whole time. And she was in one of those packs, and she looked incredibly strong. She was like one of those people who absolutely meted out her effort perfectly. Like she hit her splits were almost dead consistent the whole race. Again, I know it's easier to do on a looped course that's flat. It's still incredibly difficult, and she was able to do it very, very
Marcus,
well.
Do you guys, you being Great Britain, like dole out? It sounds like they're announced like one at a time, or how's it work?
We've still got one more, I think, female selection to go. I think that's going to be probably announced probably after the London Marathon, I think. So there's still a chance for someone else to get a place. So yeah, it's taking a long time to finish. So I do feel for the athletes, because you're in this massive holding pattern, really, because say if you run London, then you don't really get much of a recovery then to run Paris. So it's a tough year.
What's going on with Rose Harvey? Do you think she'll be, is she in contention to be one of the selected?
I think so. Yeah, she and so many other people. But yeah, it's going to be tough. And I think whoever doesn't get their place is going to be disappointed, because I think there's been so many great performances.
Although like Charlotte Perdue's disappointment, it's like kind of rough, because she was disappointed two cycles in a row. And I feel like she got so fast that it's almost like Great Britain being like, see? Our work here was successful. Like we parented you in a tough but fair way for 8 years, and like, but she's so fast now. And you're like, whoa, what was her time? Like, it was just really quick. And so,
I would love to hear her response to you saying that.
Because my understanding is she got faster and faster and faster. So you're like, yeah,
that's
what we were looking for.
Yeah, yeah.
This is my British scarf.
Just go off.
He knew we were going to be talking about some British athletes, so he like went all in.
Oh man. I mean, I think all these systems are incomplete. Matt had to go pick up his kid for a minute, so he's not going to be able to yell at me for talking out of both sides of my mouth about the importance of, I mean, I think about how different federations select their teams differently. America's like, here's one day, this is, you got to show up, it's how it's always been. And then Japan does like a crazy split of it. They have a race, but only the top two qualify, and then the third is selected by a committee. Great Britain really like drags out the suspense. Apparently, they're just like, hey, we'll let you know. Just
isn't Canada similar to Great Britain? I think.
Yeah.
Didn't Melindy Elmore get selected? I think she did.
I believe so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. This is so random. Do you all remember, I don't remember if Marcus was on the call, when I brought up the comedy account that is similar to Laura Green?
Yes.
The person's name is Karen Lessie Wiggs. She's collaborated with Sidious Mag on her most recent post.
Oh, yes. Okay, yeah. It popped in my face. Gaining a lot of popularity.
Nameless Track Club is her. She's got an affiliation with Nameless Track Club, whatever.
Nameless
anyway,
Track Club.
I had brought that up on the last call and everybody was like, Lindsay, this is really great content. Like, you can't even like deliver who you're talking about. So I wanted to deliver that information to the listeners in case they were like, I wonder who that person was, because then we also did not put it in the show notes. So,
oh yeah, we did not deliver on that. Anyone listening this deep into this podcast finally got paid off. No, she came through with a lot of comedy in the last week or so. I think City has collaborated with her several times. They had a great one about like, you know, you're a track fan, and like she's like on a party bus and she's I think that was her. Was okay, streaming like track and field on your phone when your friends are like, it's like, quiet down now, the like world champs final is on.
Did see that. Okay, I didn't know that was her. Yeah, that was good. Cool. What's next? What else?
I mean, I want to talk about all the American middle distance runners who beat all of the British middle distance runners.
Nikki Hiltz and Emily Mackay.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I always thought it was McKay, but the announcer said Mackay.
As you would, yeah, her name is very new to me. Although then I looked at her account and I was like, oh yeah, she broke 4 in the 1500 last year.
I've had her on my podcast.
Oh, you long are on top of things.
Yeah, well, that's not because of me. That's because of Emma. She usually, Emma, my editor, she knows the up and comers before I do.
World Indoor is really weird. I think we talked about it in the past. Like, it's both pockets of amazingness and also just like really big gaps. There's like literal distance on the track where you're like, oh, there are 7 women who will be competing to be right in that spot for outdoor, you know, so someone can finish 4th and you're like, I'm 4th in the world, and it's like, yeah, but there's a army of women who are like just circling waiting to join this event for Paris. So
yeah,
you know, you get excited. It's fun to see racing. Like, indoor racing is super exciting. I don't know if we haven't talked about the men's 1500, where I was texting a friend and I was like, I need to understand like the science behind Beamish from New Zealand has like just a power advantage. He runs like a high schooler coming off the final curve, like 50 meters to go. He runs like when like an 8th grader beats a bunch of 6th graders, and you're like, well, that's just not fair. 'Cause like, you know, I don't know, power and leg length, like, it's just nuts. Hobbs Kessler was in the lead. Then you have Cole Hawker, like, probably going to pass him. And then, like, the 8th grader comes, like, flying by. And you're like, what? How could someone in 25 to 40 meters go out from lane 1 to lane 3 around and then emerge victorious? Like, how does that physically happen against some of the best runners in the world? But that's just what makes it exciting.
That's crazy. Well, the Emily Mackay Nikki Hiltz finish was crazy.
Yeah, very
cool. I mean, Emily went out, you know, like she was like, I'm going to take this. And then Nikki's kick was insane.
Yeah, Nikki's kick has been on fire. So that's what makes it so fun. I do like sometimes people lose track of the fact that in indoor, they like mentally lean more towards laps left rather than just total raw distance. And so Emily, I think, made that shrewd move of, there's literally 250 meters left in the world championship. I'm just going to go. Because, you know, they ring the bell and she's like a meter to 2 up on everyone else. And there's 200 meters left in the world championship. Like, yeah, her form starts to falter a little bit. And she doesn't win because like, maybe she wasn't going to win, but she put herself in such position that she hangs in for a medal, which is pretty awesome.
Well, she knew about Nikki's kick too.
Yeah.
So she might have thought, I got to get away now. Yeah,
absolutely.
I loved Nikki's post after talking about the camaraderie and how they saw Courtney Freericks and Emma Coburn celebrate together after they medaled in the steeplechase and how they really wanted to experience that as well. And I was like,
oh, teamwork. That picture. Love it.
They're both laying on the ground.
Yeah.
Just smiling, pure joy.
It is pretty cool. And that's what makes indoor also like, I mean, just like the photos of the two of them celebrating yesterday, not from 2017, but yesterday is like,
yes,
up close, personal, like the photographer is right there on the edge of the track. It makes track and field really exciting.
I will tend to like share a picture like that on my Instagram stories for the people who are following me that aren't fans of the sport.
Oh.
Because do you know what I mean? Because like, yeah. You all and all my runner friends have seen those and they're following. But I'm like, I want the people who are on here who are in my like everyday community here in Raleigh and my, you know, people that are following me because of like mom stuff or whatever. I want them to see how special and cool those moments are that we just kind of like see all the time.
Mm.
You know,
it's notable. So, yeah. It's exciting.
Yeah. Usually when I share it, it's for those people. So,
yeah, those are the stories that. Yeah, hopefully it, like, emerge and make people more interested in watching again. I mean, I don't think we should spend too much time worrying about other people, like, caring who don't care at all, but those who have, like, a little bit of interest, I think it makes
it
really
exciting.
No, I
just want to share it. Like, I just want to share this, like, special sport that I'm a part of. Like, I just want you to see a little bit of how cool it is. I mean, when I shared the McKenna Myler reel that she put together, like, pregnant training and then, you know, racing in the trials, I had so many people that aren't runners at all that are like my mom friends being like, oh my gosh, who is that? She's amazing. You know,
it was awesome. That was a really cool story as well. Yeah, no, it's fun to curate those for where, you know, it'll be appreciated, but maybe it's getting lost in the rough.
Right, right, right.
I'm not sure if you guys spoke about this before, but what's your kind of thoughts on Michael Johnson's new venture?
Well, I haven't paid enough attention. I did get an email.
I'm excited as him as a leader.
What is he? Tell us what he's doing, Marcus.
Well, I think we're all trying to figure it out, but I think he's just trying to create a new fan-focused track league to try to create more excitement and things like that. So it's really interesting to see like what that's going to entail, who's going to take part. But yeah, I think for the sport, it's good, you know, gets people interested. So I think it's still early days, but yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what it entails really.
The man rarely misses. Like, he's very vocal. He's insanely knowledgeable, but like, a lot of people are knowledgeable and silent. He's knowledgeable and is active on Twitter for many years. And from my fan's perspective, like, he's almost always spot on. Like, sometimes he is like, oh, I have this point of view, but you might have an alternate point of view. But in terms of someone you would, what was it? Like, the Sidious guys had him on at the World Championship in 21 in Eugene, and they were like, you know, we got to get this guy in charge of the whole sport. So like, he's exactly who you'd put in charge. Whereas like, I personally wouldn't put a lot of stock in that Peter Thiel, like with the whatever games where you can take drugs, is like gonna know the nuances of how to put together a track meet. Sorry, I can't even say it with a straight face. Like, okay, you're like a you're a libertarian like technology dude who has a lot of money, and you're gonna curate what again? Because like, I think we've talked about it, but I'm not sure if we've talked about it on here. Like, the underlying joke about these, like, what's it called? Basically, like the aided games, like where you could be on as many drugs as you want. Like, the underlying the big fear there is that you would need someone who is preeminent, like among the top 0.1%, to then just go like dope to the gills and stay healthy and then arrive, because people go like, oh, let's see what people who don't know as much about the sport assume. You could just like take the top 100 individuals, like sprinters, and then, you know, give a bunch of money to 10 of them and they would dope up and then they would go on the track and they would run 8 seconds for the 100 meters or something like that. And that just almost defies the logic of how skilled you need to be to even be in the conversation. So like, you know, they'll often, not to go on and on, but like, you have to be so good to even be sniff, like approaching the 100 meter final or the semifinal. Like, you have to be so technically sound and so physically capable and so mentally focused that you could give like a whole dump truck of drugs to some other person and they just they wouldn't even come close. And that there would be nothing more awkward than like, you know, someone who's like, yep, we've confirmed he's got like 10 men's worth of testosterone coursing through his veins, and then he runs like 11.1 and you're like, what? Like, we got high schoolers in America who like are faster than you. So it's like, oh, sorry, that was a big divergence, but I felt like Michael Johnson is the knight in shining armor stepping into the fore, saying like, I'm going to start something that matters when other people are talking about stuff that likely won't matter.
Pete, I love the way you always go from one subject to another with like, I don't know how you got there, but you make a link there. It's always beautiful to hear. One thing I forgot to mention as well is Joan Benoit-Samuelson in the picture in the back. 6-star finisher as well. So shout out to her. Amazing. Congrats for 66. So incredible.
Yeah, she was going to do that last year and ended up having like an injury. And so I know she was super upset last year that she wasn't able to make it out and do it. So finishing this year was that much sweeter for her.
Yeah.
What do you, are you guys, I know you're a 6-star finisher, Marcus, but what are your feelings on the 6-stars? And like, I guess this is a question for both of you, someone who is a 6-star finisher and someone who isn't, like, how important is that? And like, what does it mean or matter?
Well, I probably could speak about this for a while. So let me just try to compress my thoughts, really. So I think for me, the 6-stars, when it first came about, was the opportunity to do something outside of the norm. So for me, all I saw was like the London Marathon. So for example, the States, Boston, you know, for us, it was London Marathon. And for me, it was the opportunity to do other races. And I had a friend that said, do New York. And I did New York first. It's incredible. And then for me, it was just about doing something new. And it just represented the idea of stepping outside of your comfort zone and what that can bring in your, in other areas of your life.
Mm.
But now I'm a little bit conflicted with the 6-stars because on one hand, it's brought me lots of friends and I love the races. I think they're so well organized. It's almost like a family reunion every time I go to a race. However, I am mindful of the cost to do it. So it's a weird one. I don't want to shout out about it too much because now you've got people who are doing it multiple times and it's a bit like, I don't know how cool it is to me to be like, I've done it this many times with other people because it almost shouts something else to other people that running isn't as fair and equitable as we all like it to seem. Like, it's not like you just get a pair of running shoes and just off you go. So I'm conflicted, really. I love it, but I do feel like it's it does show the other side of the sport.
I mean, I feel like I talked to that about this with Erica Stanley Dotton a little bit. I think it was her that I was talking to about this. Just like, you know, not to go back to my qualifying for Boston situation where people got mad at me, but it is, if you want to talk about like equity in the sport, like if you're going to travel to the Tokyo Marathon from the United States, you've got some money. Like, you know what I mean? That is an expensive thing to do. And then if you're going to go to London or you're running for charity, like you got to know a lot of people to raise that charity money. Like there's a lot more to it than that. So I think the expense of it kind of sits with me funny too.
Yeah, I agree. That's why I kind of don't... Yeah. Go ahead, Peter.
Oh, I mean, I think it's wonderful. I think it's like anything. I think it's well understood. It's a example of something that's like well marketed, well branded, well marketed.
For sure.
It's going to be a great experience. But yeah, I don't think I try to like keep a really... What's the word for it? You're like, let me just focus on the positive of it and appreciate, like Marcus is saying, the stories of people who I really enjoy the stories of people who are like, oh, I'm new to the sport. I was able to qualify for Boston. Or, I mean, some people kind of like find a way into Boston through anything to finish their 6-star. And they're just like, it's a journey that they're captivated by. It's certainly an expensive journey. But, you know, other people are like, check out my favorite thing in the world is to go skiing in the Alps. And I'm like, okay, cool. It's like, no one said that was cheap. I am a very, we could talk about equity or like accessibility in the sport. I don't think that just because elements of the sport we should be investing in to be more approachable and equitable, that all elements of the sport are going to be that way. But I don't, and I also think, Marcus, your point around like, what captured your imagination and what kept you going and then all these amazing experiences, it's pretty awesome. I think if you have the time and the money to do it all in a year, I'm like, wow, you're living a sweet life.
Yes.
Like that, it's like beginning and ends with like, that's pretty awesome. Although we'll ask Tommy how excited, I think Tommy set himself up for a particularly tough, like he's going to know the pain of London. He'll probably recover for Boston. And then he's going to run Boston. And Marcus knows it. Marcus, you've had a year to forget about the pain of the double marathon. But like Tommy's only going to have a month to forget about that pain. And he's going to try to do it again. Like the 6 day apart double marathon.
Wait, so Tommy will have done it all in a year because he ran Berlin last year, didn't he? And he always does New York. I guess he didn't do Chicago. He just spectated Chicago. He might do Chicago this year, though, he said.
Maybe.
So then you have influencer naysayers who are like, oh, that must be nice going with the brands. You know what I mean? Because a lot of people in our line of work do. I mean, look at all the Believe in the Run people. Like, everybody's just running with a brand in this, a lot of people in this industry.
Man, we're after the hour mark, and you're kicking off some really juicy topics No, I mean, there's a lot of people who these events are oversubscribed.
I actually thought about that with Boston because I qualified and then I didn't get in, and then I made the comment that the women's time, the standard is too slow, and or not, however you want to say it in the right way that doesn't offend people, whatever. And then I was like, oh, I could raise money for charity, or I could see if I could find a brand. And I was like, absolutely not will I run with a brand, even if I could, because of the fact, just, I don't know, I didn't want to be put myself in that position, and I just didn't feel right about it. And then I was like, will people care if I raise money and go? You know what I mean?
But there's plenty of influencers that we all know without naming them that get brand spots and
all the time
get paid to run these majors. So it is what it is. And I think it just goes back to the fact of when I did it, I still am doing it, but you kind of think it's the money, do you take it to your grave with you? Or sometimes it's experience that you do and you get. And I've made some incredible friends and, yeah, got some incredible experiences from it. But it is expensive. And I think it goes back to your fact of you do feel a bit selfish as a parent. Do you go to Tokyo or something like that just for a couple of days by yourself? Thousands of dollars, thousands of pounds, and your kids and your partner at home. It's like a loan with the mafia. It's like a loan you cannot pay back.
Ooh. So
it's like, how long do you keep doing that? So
I think the only way I honestly, and this is just me personally and my family, my life, the only way I would do it is if I took my family with me to travel to one of the overseas races. It's just the stage of life I'm in, though, I think.
Yeah. I understand that.
I mean, yeah, that's my big question is the...
But that would be really expensive.
Less about, or what is, the aspiration to arrive in Asia and then perform well. I mean, I coach a man who just flew from London to Japan and then broke 3 hours for the first time. Huge shout out. I was damn, so excited because you're he was capable of it, but there's just with that much global travel and change, there's any number of ways it can slide sideways on you. And so, yeah, if I go to Japan, I'd love to bring my son. And then you start to be okay, so then who's going to watch him while I run around all morning? These things become complex.
You'd have to bring your wife too, right?
I suppose. Yeah. I mean, it's
would she want to do that?
I mean, that's always the question is you add 1 + 1 + 1, then you go, so here's a chunk of change. Is dad's pursuit of this race our highest priority for using that money on holiday, or could something else,
Well, if you get an influencer bib and then you bring your spouse, does your spouse's plane ticket count as a work expense that could be written off? Right. It's tax season in the U.S.
Are they acting as your assistant in any way, shape, or form?
Are you kidding
me? Childcare, right? No.
My business falls apart immediately without my wife.
Oh, 100%.
She's a CFO, CEO, I guess, really honestly, CEO, chairman or something COO. Yeah, we can expense that.
100%. That's your assistant on the
What's
trip.
Up, IRS? Thank you.
You guys, every time I see my dad, I'm 40 years old, and every time I see my dad, he's quizzing me about making sure I'm writing everything off on my taxes. So that's a business expense, right? Because I'm usually we saw my dad in Orlando, and he's going through everything I do line by line. I'm like, Dad, I've got this figured out. I've literally been an adult for 20 years, and I've been running this business for 8 years. You know, our parents are still just looking out for us.
Yeah, looking out for you.
My mom called me 30 minutes ago to see how I was feeling.
Oh. why were you sick?
I'm just throwing this. Oh, yeah, I have a sinus infection. But like, this is what parents do. We're 40 years old. They don't care. They still call and ask us.
Guys, Matt's playing like hurt. Look, he's. You could be on the injured reserve, but you know you're here today. You're leading the call.
Well, I do want to say before we get going, before we do a sign off, which is usually like very contrived, and one of us has to like think of something to say. I have to edit out 5 minutes of like post show foreplay before we actually leave. I do want to say I want to give a shout out to Amy Zahn, who left a review on an Apple Podcast, which was really good. Again, we don't do this all the time because it can be a little too self-aggrandizing for my taste, but. She did write something that I thought was really funny. Hopefully gets to the point of what we tell people about the podcast, which was, I love that this is a great running content mixed in with friends just chatting and teasing each other. The team is made up of such good mix of personalities and backgrounds. Even when they get off topic, it's usually so humorous and will eventually come back around to running. So
eventually.
Thank you, Amy. Maybe. I feel like this conversation hit on that perfectly.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And if you are enjoying the podcast, friends, please leave us a quick rating and review. It is the freest, easiest way to support the show, and we would really appreciate it.